everybody. Welcome back. Another episode of Bootstrap Web. Brian, we took a week off. We're back, baby. We're back.
Yes, we are. We're back. We're going to check in today. I think we might take another week off next week, just so you know. But
Oh, nice.
That's it.
I went camping last week near Bend, rented like a Eurovan camper. There's an issue with camping right now. Like with three kids at this age, the ratio of work and energy expended compared to like sit down and have a beer by the fire time is way off.
Right.
The ratio,
it's a little out of whack.
It's a little out of whack right now. And my wife's like, I love camping as part of our family tradition. I'm like, I'm exhausted personally.
We keep looking at camping as an option for a trip. And we're like, yeah, that sounds like so much fun. And then like, but we're both like, yeah, we're not going to do that.
Yeah, I know. And like, I want to think of myself as a little like a rugged man who can be in the outdoors. I'm a Jewish boy from Long Island. People, what am I supposed to do here? I got to be honest with myself.
Oh, man.
Yes. It was a great time. And we went with family, friends, actually like a friend of the pod too, runs a company here. So we went with his family and their three kids. And that was great because you get the parents matched up and the kids matched up and people are like, higher likelihood of, you know, being a good place and not being stressed.
Yep. That's cool.
Oh, yes. So we're in the summer. We're coming up on August. We're deep in here, man. I see the turn. I know for me, it's like, you know, if it's a horse race all year, like I see the turn coming toward Black Friday. Yep.
Yeah. If you're thinking about Black Friday, I mean, I'm just thinking about like, you know, I think every single year, even with COVID and everything, like this hasn't changed my usual yearly mindset of early in the year, usually around Big Snow Tiny Conf and with that group of friends, that's where I start to make statements about here's what I want to do this year. And of course I made all mine before COVID hit and everything, but still. And so it's like the rest of the year, those statements, goals, you know, things that I want to achieve and do and build this year, those are like a constant like rattling around my head. And then like June hits and it's like, all right, we're halfway through. How far along am I? You know?
Yes. It starts to come into focus. You start to realize December doesn't really count because nothing gets done. You're like, oh, wow. The time feels short.
And for the record, I feel like there has never been a year where I ever felt like on pace by midway. I'm always behind, you know?
Yes. I hear that. I think for us, it's always been, we have like a goal. And then as we get closer to the holidays, I'm like, ooh, that was a bit optimistic. We can't possibly achieve that goal. And then the holidays hit so hard that we blow past the goal. And I'm like, whoa, by January, I'm relieved. This year, that kind of happened with COVID because e-commerce boomed. And now I have no idea what to expect in the holidays.
Right.
Like, is it going to go up the same way as other years? I hope so, but I really don't know. I'm trying not to plan in that same way because it feels overly optimistic.
It's, you know, for me, it's weird with COVID this year because it's like, I honestly don't know how COVID has impacted Process Kit, if it has at all. I don't know. I can compare audience ops to previous years and thankfully it's basically pretty steady. It's actually looking like a very similar year. March was a little bit weird, but like 2019 overall is going to look a lot like 2020 on most metrics there. But with Process Kit, it's a brand new SaaS app and 2020 will be the first full year of customer growth from January through December, whereas because the previous year only started adding customers midway through the year. It's been obviously the slow ramp and everything, but it has been adding customers every single month and it continues to. I just don't know what this would have looked like if COVID wasn't happening.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the Twitter threads recently that I've seen. I think one today from Glimmer, the founder of Snappa. And he showed the graph on how long it took to get to $1 million in ARR. And I think it was 4 years. And then in 5 months, they got to $1.5 million. So it's like the consistency around SaaS and longevity, that seems to be the thing, man.
I've seen a few of those tweets where people show the early graph and it's like, all right.
Yes. Yeah. You got to stick with it longer than you want.
I'm in that early, the very early part of that graph. And I'm like, oh, this is tough.
Yes. You know? Yes, it is. Yeah. I mean, speaking of Twitter, you know, what we, Brian and I talked about before hitting record was, I think it is a new required skill to be able to keep your emotions in check in this environment. So I think the COVID thing just has people, the emotions are just heightened over everything, especially parents. It's August. We know September is just going to be even more difficult. And there's something about the ecosystem and Twitter and the amount of noise, the competitors, the flexing, the funding, the never-ending worship of VC, like all this stuff just keeps swirling around. And the ability to ignore it and look at the big picture is like a new skill you need to develop. I am not that good at it. I have streaks where I'm good at it, and then I go bad. And, you know, it's literally what I talk about in therapy. I'm like, how do I deal with this? The advice that I was given was to identify the difference between an emotion and a mood. A tweet from a competitor, that creates an emotion. Like, my mood is dictated by my family and my wife and my amazing kids and our health. Like, how to separate those two out and not let an emotion ruin the mood is, it feels like a new skill. I know, at least personally, that I need to just keep developing or I end up exhausted.
Regarding Twitter, I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast yet, but about 2 or 3 weeks ago, for the very first time, maybe I should have done this sooner. You've done this, and I know other people have, where it's like, I'm going to quit Twitter for a couple of weeks. Take a break, a Twitter break. And I always found that a little bit like I totally get it and I respect it, but I personally, I never felt a need.
That it was impacting you to that degree?
Yeah. And I still get a lot of value from hanging out on Twitter. And so I don't want to give it up. But 2 or 3 weeks ago, it started to occur to me, I really am spending too much time scrolling on Twitter. And specifically only on my phone. So Twitter does not impact me during the workday when I'm here in my office. I do check it here in my office, but what I do is I just open it up in a tab in the browser. I check it for 2 seconds and I close that tab out. It doesn't remain open. And it's like a quick mental breather break. Like, all right, I just pushed some code. Now go check Twitter. I'm still super motivated to get work done and execute while I'm sitting in this chair in this room. Like, I never have a problem with that. But what I started to realize is like, oh, when I'm sitting in bed, like, wow, have I actually been scrolling Twitter for the past hour? Or like, I'm hanging out with my kids. Like, why am I looking at this tweet right now?
Yes. It's a strange thing. At least you're questioning yourself though. The awareness is there.
And then that, what wraps into it is, of course, is the content that you see on Twitter, which is our peers, our competitors, the people who we get jealous of, and all those emotional things that happen. So what I did 3 weeks ago was I did take your advice, and I knocked Twitter off my phone and made it so that it's extremely painful. Yeah, the app.
Yes, the browser.
The browser is like impossible. You can't. And I did that for about probably two or three weeks, and it felt really good. Here's the thing, like some people are like, well, just lock your phone in a box after work and don't look at it all night. Well, that's not, or like on the weekend, that's not realistic, because I do want to use my phone for things. I just don't want to use it for Twitter. So I did that, and that was fine. I found like I was reading more. I was looking at my phone a lot less, and that was helpful. But then I did end up reinstalling it, and now I'm right back to my old ways. And
yes, me too. Here I am. Yeah, it's a tough thing. You know, I had a really, really helpful conversation with a VC.
It was a good break, though. Like, it was good for me to acknowledge, like, okay, now I've tested that, and now I can go back to that strategy.
It is a strange, new, modern point of pride internally, like with yourself, when you put your phone down and walk away from it and like hang out with your kids outside. And I get satisfaction from not bringing my phone on walks. After dinner, we'll go for a walk around the neighborhood with the kids, and they'll ride their scooters, you know, and leaving my phone at home is like, it feels good to just do that. Yeah. So I had this really helpful conversation with the VC a few months ago. He funded a company that could have become a competitor eventually. It has since crashed and burned, which tells you something. And I pinged him, and we had been talking a little bit, and his advice, I asked him about this specifically. I was like, you know, how should I deal with this? Like, I'm seeing these competitors, like, we're doing well, and I'm still seeing these competitors, all this hype, all this money, and I'm like, how do I ignore that? He's like, here's the deal. The hype and the money is necessary if you want to win the market. If you want to build $1 billion company, you have no choice. You have to make an enormous dent in the market. You need people to know you, adopt, the whole deal. If you're trying to build what you're telling me you're trying to build, a sustainable, profitable company that does well for you and everyone involved, you just don't have to think about it at all. And that like stuck with me because, you know, I just had all these conversations with VCs that we talked about in the last episode. And a lot of it came down to what is the actual goal? What are you trying to do? And in my head, I kind of have like this new goal. I have this fantasy, right? 20 million ARR, 5 million in profit. Like that by any objective measure is a smash hit success.
Yeah.
Right. And I can see, all right, if I keep working for years, I can get there. And that, how do I put the blinders on?
Yeah.
Right. Because in e-commerce, 20 million ARR is like, no one even knows you exist. The market is so enormous that I really don't have to care about what other people are doing. Now, how do I train myself on a day-to-day basis to carry that with me so that when I see something, that's cool for them. Great. New partnership, new this, well, whatever, raise money, congratulations. Doesn't affect me. I have to figure out a way to do that if I'm going to do this for years without the ups and downs.
Well, when you think about competition, like say like direct competitors, meaning like your customers are thinking like, should I use Cardhook or maybe instead I'll use them? Like those companies, and I've got plenty of them that I think about for Process Kit. Do you think about it like an actual competition, like winning over them? Or do you think about it more like, I want to carve out as significant a chunk of this pie, but we can coexist?
So I don't think about it as competition in the sense of I want to beat them, I want to be bigger than them, I want them to, you know, crash and look, all that. I look at it as competition in the form of where are they aiming and where am I aiming and what can I learn from them and how can I maneuver to get into the right place. It's so I think about it as like a contrast in strategy. So I don't think of like, you know, whatever, Bolt, right? One of our direct competitors just raised another $50 million. So now they're up to $140 million. So I look at that and I don't say I want to be bigger than them, raise more money than them, make more money, whatever. I don't think about that. But I think about what are they doing with the product and why is that right or wrong and what should we adjust based on that? So that for me is like the siren song of Twitter, that I do get a lot of this information that helps me come up with the right strategy and the right angle. And I feel like if I don't get that information, I'm not as sharp.
I tend to really agree. Actually, like right now I'm deeply focused on marketing for Process Kit. And I can go more into the details of what I'm doing here, but one of the things when it comes to competition, for the whole past 2 years, I've been really studying the competition, especially as it relates to how my customers talk about the competitors. That can lead to a lot of stress for me. Like, cause I see competition as like, again, like not like I'm trying to win them or I want bad things to happen to them, but I see them as a barrier to my entry into this market. Like how much of a threat are they to me winning over individual customers?
Yes. At that level, you can't ignore it.
No, I don't ignore it. It's extremely important to focus on it because for me, sales calls are literally about comparing us to them. So up until about this month ago, like it's been a lot of just researching and getting a really good understanding of how my customers think about those competitors. And now that I'm looking at marketing and starting to study things like keyword research and SEO opportunities and you start to deeply start to analyze like how are those competitors getting their traffic and who are they focusing on and who are they trying to reach. And one of my competitors did recently raise a Series A, you know, and then I think about that. I'm like, well, what are they doing with that now? And it started to occur to me that the positioning for Process Kit, that starts to give me more comfort as I start to think about competition. Like by starting to focus more on marketing, and especially the positioning of which customer segments I'm trying to really reach, I'm starting to realize like, wow, I'm actually taking a much different angle at this than they are. Even though the products are very similar, you can maybe make the argument like that maybe there's some risk in that because they've figured a lot of things out with the market, but like but I have this inroad and it has been converting customers. I just need to sort of scale in this direction, which is more of a narrow focus, which I think is good. And it's just differentiated. It feels less of a threat to know that like my direct competitors have teams of hundreds of people with millions in investments.
Yes. The worst thing you can do is try to do the same things they're doing with fewer resources.
Right.
And that feels like, you know, a trap I could have fallen into much more easily 15 years ago. As just less experience, I could have looked at it and been jealous and wanted to do the same thing. And that's all wrong. That's kind of clearly wrong.
While we're talking about competitors, I think I mentioned on the podcast a couple weeks ago that I have a few of these pages in the works for, you know, comparing Process Kit to competitors. I've got three of them coming out. I've been working with a really great copywriter on them. The copy is done. They're in Google Docs. I just need to basically design the pages and get them launched. I think a lot of SaaS founders feel hesitant about launching these kinds of pages. Although it's a really popular strategy to have like the alternative to, there's always the hesitancy, I think, on two fronts. One is just like, oh, you don't want to like tell your customers who your competitors are because maybe they haven't heard of them before.
Okay.
In my case, I'm not. Yeah, I'm not so worried about that because I'm certain that my customers are aware of all of them. The other hesitancy people might have is like, well, maybe this is like too aggressive, trying to
like confrontational,
like too confrontational. Seeing the copy that the finished copy that this guy helped me do, super happy with it. Yeah. It is really aggressive, like much more so than like a typical alternative to page.
Okay, that's tough. I mean, you got to think about that. You may want to dial it back. You may not.
But look, when I read it, I'm like, damn, this is good. Like.
That's tricky because it exists in two different worlds completely, before you publish it and after you publish it. You can have these ideas, you can write the copy, but it's very different once it's published. And then especially if the competition reaches out to you about it. That's what happened to us. It was relatively easy. We just ran competitive ads on Google on their brand name, which I don't think is that big of a deal. I assume people are doing it.
Everybody's doing that. Yeah.
Right, right. So I didn't think it was a big deal. I got a very unhappy DM from the founder and was like, look, he said, I won't do it to you. I would appreciate it if you don't do it to us. I said, cool. It felt too aggressive to be like, screw you. You don't do it to us because whatever, we're still going to do it to you. That was like, nah, I didn't want to go there.
Do you have the alternative to pages on your site?
No, we don't.
Okay.
But we should.
My market is super competitive and there's just a lot of tools and all customers are switching. It's not like some are like they're all switching.
Right. There's no, oh, I came up with an idea today to start this.
Yeah. No, it's, I don't know. Like I'm open to people's feedback on this, honestly, but like the pages have, and they're not live yet, but they will be maybe in the next two to three weeks. What he did was he went to like G2 and Capterra and found the reviews where they're complaining about the competitors and we're like featuring those.
Oh, very smart.
On the page.
Very smart.
And like
crafty.
Not just to like poke at them, but like they complain about this and here's how Process Kit solves that. Like,
yeah, I mean, that I like that. I like that in theory. I really like it. Maybe a good framework for you to use is what happens when the founder of the other company emails you and says, this is a little uncalled for. What do you do? Like make it real. And if you're willing to write back and say, I totally understand. It is a bit aggressive, but we believe these things are all true. And yeah, we're going to stick with
it. I was going to say, I do think that it's not like we're like being mean about it. I'm just saying, it's more about like the positioning. Again, it's like, look, if these are the things that you care about, this is the true comparison. You
know? Yeah. Cool. I'm excited. I'm excited. I want to see it.
Maybe it's not as bad as I'm thinking, because it's that anxiety. It's like, how much do I want to pick a fight here? You know.
Yes. Yes.
I know I'm extremely small in comparison in terms of business size and everything. I certainly don't have a huge audience, but I have had customers who I talk to say that they've spoken to customer support at those companies and they report to me like they're aware of Process Kit.
Like, ooh, I like that. like that. Yes. Who is it? Dustin Moskovitz, right? That's the Asana founder. There you go. Get an email from him.
I don't know.
Come on. What's up, Dustin? Let's do this.
Oh, man.
yes.
Anyway, so that's one thing I'm doing on the marketing front.
All right. Well, we kick things off nicely today.
Yeah. What do you got on your plate? I think last week you were you were going to talk about like people ops. I don't know if that's something. Yeah.
That has come down in like significance for now. My guess is it'll go up again soon because we're hiring 12 people, and that is just kind of a lot more than we've ever taken on. What I ended up doing on the people ops front is not going with a full-time hire. We have an amazing people coach, and she works at a much larger startup, and they're kind of going crazy. They're growing really big. They're got acquired and now they're being spun out in a new, like this is really a lot going on for them. I think it's like 1500 people. So she runs people for a company like that. It's kind of, so what she did is she emailed me and said, I am toast. I can't do that much for you anymore. I want to keep coaching. So now I have my, what I think is a very healthy balance. I have a therapist every 2 weeks and I have a people coach every 2 weeks. And it's like personal and business, personal right. and business goes back and go. Forth. It's very, very helpful.
Get them talking to each other and like collaborating. Oh my God.
I don't know if I want that. It's going to get my wife involved on both sessions. Like, come right. on in, let's get this all out on the table. So what she's doing is introducing me to someone else who can actually run the programs. And programs are things like goal setting and leadership training. And like, we have like a book club going with the leadership team on like, we're all going to read this book. Then we're going to talk about it 2 weeks from now. And we're going to kind of have this brainstorming
that would totally
session.
Stress me out. Just cause like I read, but like super slow. I would be like, I didn't do the homework. Sorry.
Oh geez. Oh yeah, I know. It's well, if anyone has to do the homework, it's me, right? You don't want to set that example.
Yeah.
I have stopped as much as possible all things that only the CEO can do, like taking a phone call during a meeting, things like that. It's like I've eliminated all those things because it's just not cool.
Yeah. Right.
So we're going to work with another outsourced people ops person to run the programs for us. And I think that'll be enough for us. And we're also in the middle of a trial with a piece of software called 15.5. And 15.5 is like people management. So it's check-ins, one-on-ones, 360-degree reviews, OKRs, goals, that all that stuff. But I wanted to use a tool for it because right now we're using Notion and Google Docs and it's not really centralized and it's not really organized. And so I know one-on-ones are happening, but I don't get reported back, hey, I just completed my one-on-one with this person today and here's the information from it. That doesn't happen. These one-on-ones are happening and the leads are doing it with their reports, but I don't really see it. And I want to get to a place where I put all of my trust in the leads, but that the information around what's happening in the company from people is more transparent. So you have visibility, but I don't need to go around a lead to see how an individual contributor is doing because that's not really my role. That's the lead's role. They're the manager and they need to manage. So in order to get there, I felt like we needed organization.
And also having like a paper trail of like these were what the one-on-ones looked like for the last 4 months, you know.
Yes. And so 15.5, along with other software that does the same type of thing, standardizes it, organizes it, and they have a bunch of clever things like, so if a manager has a one-on-one with someone and they come out of that with a specific concern, they can very easily pass that up. It's a pass-up feature. So they can take that issue and pass that up to me and put that on our agenda for the next one-on-one we have to talk about.
Oh, that's
cool. Because that stuff gets lost. You'll do it on, you know, August 3rd, you'll have a one-on-one. And then the next one-on-one with me with the manager is on August 24th. Good luck. Remember. So it feels very much like a lot of the business and a lot of my life is run by recency bias. It's just everything that happened recently is the thing you talk about in And I don't think that's not fair.
That's how I feel everybody. With like marketing strategy right now. It's like the last advice I heard, I'm like, that's what we're going to do. And then like the next day, it's like, nope, that's all wrong.
Right. Now, like, look, you can go back and forth and you're completely in charge right now, right? I'm no longer completely in charge. There's other people who are in charge of other people. And then it becomes unfair for me to make judgments on people's performance when I just don't have any clarity on how they did. And so as these things are happening, it really needs to be documented. Things that are going well, things that are not going well, all this stuff. So that's kind of the direction we're going on the people side.
Nice. Yes.
Yeah, I'm excited about it. My concern was if we don't do it now and we add 12 people, like then it's even harder to get everyone to change. We're already going to ask 20 people to change their behavior. But if we change their behavior...
I just like the idea of looking for a new type of tool, software, before just taking on a salary for that, you know?
Yes. And it's a combination of things.
There would probably still be a time where it does make sense to have a people ops person, but like sometimes just a better way to organize things internally is kind of
That the next step, instead of just basically throwing money at the problem and saying you do all this stuff and you're in charge of it, I think the outsourced people person plus new software, start running these programs and make progress there, and then reassess if we need someone full time or not and what type of person. If we hired for what I thought we needed a month ago, I think it would have been wrong. That's what I think. It would have ended up wrong, and then that's not fair to that person either.
Yeah.
So the hope is that we can get this stuff done now, and then as we bring on these 12 new people, they walk into a situation with this is just how it's done. They don't have to learn one thing and then change their behavior. This, they come into a new company, and this is how the new company reports stuff. Easy.
Right.
I mean, speaking of people, I'm interviewing a lot of people right now to hire for marketing.
Where are you on it? What type of role? Like,
yeah. So this is for Process Kit. All right. So high level goal right now is to start executing on marketing strategy. And I've talked about it in previous episodes. I've been spending weeks now getting a lot of really, really useful, solid advice from friends and advisors who know a lot more than me about specific channels like SEO and targeted content strategy and ads and cold direct outreach and just exploring. Like I've been spending the past month going down the rabbit hole on all of these things and literally understanding like what is the latest best advice and best practice on all these channels, and then understanding like what's involved. And then the goal is I don't want to really work on any of it. I want to outsource most of the execution and still give my 20% input on that. But I want a person or persons to execute. And so I'm still going back and forth on whether like should I run some targeted ad campaigns first or start investing in content and SEO first. But in terms of being able to hire someone, the content and SEO is kind of the avenue that I'm starting to really focus in on.
Invest in.
It's not easy, but it's the most direct way that I could hire a person or a couple of people to start executing on that. Any early ad campaigns that I do will be very low budget, just because it's like early tests.
Right. Why would you?
And so when you're doing low budget, it doesn't make sense to hire someone.
True.
To manage, like to outsource that, you got to be at a higher budget for that to make sense.
Yes.
I might spend some time at some point near future to do the ads part of it. Same with the cold outreach. I started setting up some tools for direct cold outreach, some like LinkedIn prospecting and things like that. I don't know what to expect there, but that's also something that I'll probably do on my time at some point. But the real long-term effort is going to be SEO and content. So obviously there's audience ops, and I've got some really great writers that I could go to at audience ops to write really solid content. Part of the gap, honestly, with audience ops and what a lot of our audience ops clients do is they pair us with an SEO expert. So they bring in, either it's in-house at their company or they bring in some other SEO consultant to help them do the deep SEO keyword research and the game plan, the content calendar, although we'll help come up with that too for clients. But like some companies are just a lot more strategic about that. And then they come to audience ops to execute the actual writing. That's one avenue that I could go down. And so I've been interviewing mostly SEO focused marketers. In a couple of cases, they've been agencies. In most of the cases, they've been like independent consultants. And right now, I'm pretty happy with this, with the handful of people that I've interviewed. I'm probably going to make a decision by next week of who I'm going to work with. And that's probably going to look like some sort of like monthly retainer, but it might vary from month to month because we will probably do like a content hub targeting a specific topic or topic cluster, and then focusing a lot of the budget and effort on promotion of that. So like link building and promotion and PR for that content. And these are things that especially the distribution and promotion side, I'll mention it here on the podcast, but I'm not going to work on that. I need a person to do that as a strategy, you know, link building, promoting it and engaging in communities and doing different things like that. And so that's kind of who I'm looking for, like a part-time freelance person or small agency to work with. I'm leaning towards a couple of, you know, consultants to work with me on like a retainer basis. And then it's a little bit up in the air of what, if that person is a writer, then maybe I'll have them write some of the pieces, but I might go to a writer at Audience Ops to just execute stuff based on that person's like target keywords and content briefs and things like that.
Is it safe to assume that in your category that there's significant search?
Yes, there is. But again, like I said, like with those competitors, I could see where they're getting a lot of the traffic from. And a lot of them are targeting like enterprise customers with like enterprise-y keywords in their content and everything.
Right. And like the HubSpot form landing page, that version of things.
There are still opportunities in that arena that I think we can capitalize on. But I'm honestly just more concerned with understanding who the best customers are. And I have a pretty good idea of that. Even if it means like lower search volume, if it's higher quality traffic, then that's all that really counts. You know, I'm still up in the air, still trying to figure out exactly what the right strategy is. But part of this is like this consultant should be dictating a lot of that. And I'll be giving my input, especially as it relates to like what I understand about the customers, and then let them execute on the content and everything. And so that, frankly, the goal is to have me focus the majority of my time and effort on the product design, the roadmap, developing features, and talking to customers. And I'm going to continue to be the lead support person. I'm doing a lot of support, but I don't see a need to like outsource that yet. I like interfacing with customers and then taking what I learn and going and working on the product. But we have to start executing on actual marketing. It is increasing. Like every month now, MRR is growing, number of trials are growing, conversion rate is getting slightly better month to month, but it's trickles of increases. We have no strategy right now. It's just...
Right. You just built the product and you're identifying who to build it for and what the feature set is, but you do need something in the background. Look, you have the luxury, and it's good that it sounds like you're using it, that you can be patient and do the right things, because what happens when people don't have that patience is they don't invest in SEO and they don't invest in things that are really going to pan out 6 to 12 months later.
And yeah, that's why I was thinking like, might as well start on this effort now. And because obviously I've done content for basically all of my businesses up until now, but I think this time around, I'm probably more strategic about it than ever. And getting a lot of really good advice from friends and people who know a ton about this stuff. This time around, I'm going to really probably invest a lot more in promotion of content than I have in the past. In the past, I basically just created content that sort of ranked and sort of gets shared around and resonates with some people. But we're going to develop a bunch of content pieces, but then we're going to invest a lot in promotion of them. So we'll see.
Cool, man. Very cool.
That's the goal. I mean, the other thing on that front is that I'm working on the website update, like the homepage. Next week when this goes live, the update, the homepage should be done, because I have some customer case studies that I've done, like video calls that I'm highlighting their testimonials. I've got a lot more. I'm showing the product a lot more now on the homepage. The previous one was like, I created it like 8 months ago when the product was half built, you know,
and you were highlighting the problems, but not the actual product.
I was highlighting the problems. I had a lot of like cartoony illustrations and now it's like, here's like the big interface front and center. Like, look at this and this is cool. How it works. You know?
Yeah. That does feel like what people want to see these days. Just show me the product.
Yep.
On my side, to kind of start finishing things off, I have a call in 15 minutes. I have started to enjoy working from home. I have been
converted him.
I've been one down on it. So I went to the office a few days ago in the week. And then I came home and I was like, man, I haven't seen my kids and my wife in hours and hours and hours. Like I feel like I missed out on the day. And I'm just really into just being close to them during the day. And I don't really mind like being where I am. I am looking into other options beyond my bedroom. The playroom, I really can't take over. And we're about to do like a tutor share with another few families in the fall because schools aren't opening here. And so,
oh, okay. Yeah.
Right.
I've been reading about those.
Yeah. So we got a few families together and we hired a third grade teacher who is taking the year off. And it's just a small pod of a few kids, but that means a few days a week, all those kids are going to be here. Mm. And so I really can't take over anywhere else in the house. So I'm looking at redoing the garage. I'm looking at, I don't know what to do, but I like it. And I bought myself an iMac.
There you go.
And it comes next week. And I feel like I'm going to ride that high for a good 2-3 weeks, you know?
Yeah, man.
I'm excited awesome. About it.
They're opening the schools here full time. So I really don't know what to expect with that. It's
that's not happening here. That is just not happening. We already announced that there will be no in-person school until at least November. So, you know, parents get your stuff in order is basically what they're saying.
I'm sort of the opposite though. I miss being able to just go out and work at like Starbucks just to get myself out of here.
You know? That side of it, yes. But I talk to my team. I go into my office. It's such a point of pride. You know, it is, you had an idea in your head and you grinded for years. And then all of a sudden there's like a building with your logo on it. You know, it really made me really satisfied. Yeah. And to shut it down is such a bummer. But I think that's what we're going to do. I talked to the team and everyone's like, no, I don't really want to come back. And so, you know, to pay $5,000 a month for just me to go there once a week or something is just it's just a bit silly.
Yeah.
So that's it.
I used to, back in the day, or a couple of years back, I rented an office in Norwalk.
I remember.
Connecticut. I remember. That was pretty cool. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. I love it. It just doesn't matter what I love.
But I mean, it was small. It was just, I was sharing it with a friend of mine and like, it was just for me. It's not like, it wasn't like about working with a team in person. It was just like
getting out.
I go here for work and then I drive 5 minutes and then I'm home, you know?
Yes. Yes. I feel you.
Yeah, man. Is that all we got?
I think that's all we got. All right. I had some notes. I think we covered them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I got most of my stuff here too.
Man.
Back at it, man.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
All right. Later, folks.
See ya.